Well, hello. Welcome to Microsoft Virtual Academy.
Security fundamentals.
Yes, indeed. I love that. It's good. I like it.
We got the Vanna White hand going on already. We've just started nailing it already.
See, but that makes me want to make like a sidekick joke, because I always feel like, you know, Vanna White's the one in the background while Pat Sajak's in the limelight.
Christopher, I'm always happy to be your sidekick.
I won't, though, because really, at the end of the day, I think you're doing most of the work in these particular MTA
and
MBA
happy to do so. Happy to do
that's,
so.
That's good. I am too. I'm very much so. So we're here to continue the series we've started on Microsoft Technology Associate certifications with security fundamentals. We've done one of these prior up to this point, the networking fundamentals. You can go take a look at that on MicrosoftVirtualAcademy.com. And yeah, if you want to see more and more Microsoft Virtual Academy content on MTA, we're going to be bringing it to you over the next couple of weeks. What's next? Let's see. We jump right into meet the presenters. Oh, I guess we want to get some slides up for you over there.
Just a second. Slides aren't.
We're a little out of sync because you're the one showing the deck and I'm the one talking. So
the slides aren't. Okay, so there's the first.
That's
one.
Of course. Yes, we're good. There's our first slide. So Microsoft Where's, Technology Associate.
There we go. Wait. Let's go back. Sorry.
No, it's good. 98-367 security fundamentals. Christopher Chapman, me, Thomas Willingham, gentleman next to me. We talk a little bit about ourselves. IT manager and implementer, 15 years in IT, doing pretty much everything you can do. Small, medium business, enterprise, consulting, implementation, hands-on. I did phone support at one point. Everyone in IT should do phone support for a small period of time. It will teach you some of those valuable lessons in life at all. Think anything else on here is really that pertinent. Instructor, I am an MCT. I've been an MCP and MCSE since the NT4 days. I think that's it. I've taken the Microsoft Technology Associate exams in the infrastructure realm, server administration, operating system fundamentals. They're great tests. They're great knowledge. They're great for people starting out, career changers, new to IT, or maybe you're in an IT role and you're looking to advance into something a little bit more complicated. These are a great way to do that, to get you started, especially if you're new to certification, I think. Because some of our certifications, they're a little intimidating. They're a little lot to
they're
handle.
They're a little meaty.
They can be.
They're meaty.
These ones, not quite as much so. So they're a good prep for even further certifications. And my contact info is on here. You can email me at ChristopherMVA@Microsoft.com or Twitter at ChristopherMSL.
See, now I'm totally okay with spending a little bit more time on your slide. Once again, you have that like glamour shot going on, that artist. Look, I'm an artist versus me. We'll go to the next slide. I have the hipster selfie.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's
notice the selfie there. And I'm pensive.
I was going to say, you seem more contemplative than
yeah,
I do.
Yeah, I'm a little more pensive. And honestly, one of my favorite posters is in the background, Code to Fame. It was an old home server platform contest that they ran about coding. But I just like the fact that somebody wrote Code and Fame on their hands. I thought that was funny. My background is I taught MCSE and Novell CNE and consulted for about 10 years. I did some courseware authoring for Microsoft Learning. Currently, I am a content developer for remote desktop virtualization for about the last 5 years. To contact me, gotthomas@microsoft.com. Feel free to contact me if you've had questions. I've had some people contact me and Microsoft. Christopher, I think you have also had some people contact you from previous courses.
Yep.
We actually get back to people. I've been known to answer a question or two to help people out. Always willing to help people out.
Yes.
Or feedback.
I will say, I can be a little funny here. I got an email last week looking for tech support. Like, not the tech support team. Somebody emailed me and said, I need help fixing something. I can't remember what it was. And I was like, here's a link to our support team. They can help you out. So if you email me for tech support, not sure I'm going to be that. I mean, I'll be responsive, yes. How helpful I'll be will be relative.
Well, okay. So sometimes when you receive a response from somebody, there's two levels of help. There's one, here's the help directly. The second, which I think is just as good, is here's a resource to the help you need. I think that's just as good as the help itself.
Oh, I agree. We'll see how the emailer feels about
how they feel about it.
When I get their response. I think, yeah.
Okay, let's.
You've met enough of us. We're good with us.
Yeah, so let's dive on in. Course topics. So 98.367 Security Fundamentals. The first module, we'll talk about understanding security layers. Module 2, authentication, authorization, and accounting. Module 3, understanding security policies. Module 4, understanding network security. And finally, Module 5, protecting servers and clients. I think as an audience, you'll find a lot of these modules will go relatively quickly. So feel free to dig in. You might want additional resources. We'll talk about those towards the end of the deck or the end of the module. And this is just a start. This is just to get people started. So once you start having those questions, feel free to use other resources to go further and go deeper.
Well, I was going to say, to qualify the, you may find that this one goes rather quickly. It's because security is, I mean, in its own right, it's a career path. You could spend the rest of an IT career just doing security. This course is really just an intro. Here are some terms you're going to have to get familiar with. Here are some principles you're going to have to get familiar with. Here are some ideas of things you're going to do. We are going to do some demos. You're going to see a little bit of hands-on. But security is such a massive topic that they tried to keep it light enough that, well, I kind of suspect we kept the MTA light enough to get you interested but not scare you out of.
Right. Right.
Here's 45 days of in-classroom training that you might have to do. Start here. Now, this a little easier.
Security is a conundrum, and especially when you're talking about network security, because networking is about allowing your users access to resources. Security is about keeping people away from resources. So when you put network security together, it's a little different. It's not just, I need to keep people out. There's also I need to ensure continued access. I need to ensure that the data isn't corrupted. I need to ensure physical protection. So there's numerous layers within this security. So there's some nuances in here that we need to take a look at.
Well, and all of them with holes in them, because some people do have to get through to it.
Exactly.
It's really easy for me to lock down a network if I don't want anybody to get any work done. That's simple.
Well, so I've heard that the definition of a truly secured network is the network that isn't plugged in.
Exactly. It is indeed. Best way to secure your network, just unplug the wire.
Just unplug everything. Okay, so let's set expectations. Target audience, IT pro help desk staff interested in moving into network systems administration. Anyone interested in learning more about networking? That should be any network professional at any time.
Well, in this one, I would say there's a kind of a qualification. You may be already in this case, a network or systems administration role, maybe a junior administration role, and security hasn't been a focus, especially if you work at a larger enterprise where they may have people doing security. You get into larger networks and people have more specific roles. You may be doing something that may even be security-based but not understand bigger security principles because someone else is doing it. So I don't want to say this is only for IT people, even though, or help desk staff, even though it's kind of in there. It's an intro course. So.
And there's some prerequisites, supporting material here, some exams that you could take, Windows Operating Systems Fundamentals, Networking Fundamentals, and the Server Administration Fundamentals.
And a note about that, because I'd put this, when I built this slide, I struggled with this, because you're going to see at the end of the modules additional resources and next steps, and these are on there as well. And the reason for that is these four MTA courses, the security, the network fundamentals, the operating system fundamentals, and the server fundamentals are to some degree sort of interchangeable. You could take them in any order you really want to because they're not interdependent. So what order you take them in is up to you. So I put them here as prerequisites, suggested prerequisites and supporting material, and then again at the end as additional resources, depending on which ones you're taking first. If you're taking security first, then these aren't prereqs. They're going to be additional and next steps. If you're taking security last, these may have been your prerequisites. So,
but you might find that you get a little bit more out of security by having taken these first.
Probably. We were talking about this actually before we started recording today. My preference, I think we kind of all agreed, us and the production staff, networking and OS fundamentals are kind of going to be the starting point. Those first two you see on this list, 349 and 366. And then server administration and security are going to be your next two. Again, I won't go too far into dictating an order, but that's kind of the idea.
Okay, so we get to dive in now. Now is the time. So Microsoft Virtual Academy, Module 1, Understanding Security Layers. So security layers, we'll talk about security principles, and we'll talk about physical security. So core security principles. Core security principles include CIA, confidentiality, integrity, and availability. Confidentiality, so keeping the data and resources that you work with private. So the data that you have access to, ensuring that unauthorized users do not have access to it, and that authorized users do have access to it. So there were, this was a while back, there were some court cases that a hacker got onto a network and found or argued that he was welcomed onto the network when he came aboard. So he got a login message, he used someone else's login and someone else's password, but when he accessed the network, he received a login greeting for the network. Hello, welcome to the network. So he argued to the court, well, I was welcomed on the network, so not my fault. Actually, he won.
I say, did that work?
Yeah, that did work. So what they did, that's why nowadays a lot of the messages that you see are more confidentiality based. Welcome to the network if you're the appropriate user. If you're the appropriate user, continue to access resources. If you're not the appropriate resource or the appropriate person, you should log off at this time. Notice that I don't remember what the date was, but there was a shift from, because before network messages used to be very welcoming. Hey, welcome to the network. Come on in. It's great. And then all of a sudden it shifted and it became welcome to the network if you're the appropriate user. So that's confidentiality. Integrity. Ensuring that the data stays intact, is consistent, is accurate, is valid. What do we mean by this? Well, hard drives go bad. Content over the wire gets corrupted. Ensuring that this data integrity stays appropriate.
Or hasn't been modified.
Modified how?
Yeah. Someone changing it. I mean, in all fairness, someone gets into your network. They don't necessarily want to do, well, this would be a way to do damage. They don't want to steal your information. They want to change it in a way you don't know about to impact business elsewhere or later on.
Okay. So possibly changing figures, values, whatever,
exactly,
in a database or something. So, yeah, again, that would affect integrity on the network.
Yep. Anything that changes your data.
And then finally, availability. Describes a resource being accessible to the user. So we talk about uptime. I'm sure you've heard the term uptime or service level agreements. Service level agreements basically refer to what availability and integrity should the data have for resources for users to connect to.
Mm-hmm. When's it going to be around? How long is it going to be around? Can I expect that it's going to be available a certain percentage of the time? And in this case, in fact, here at Microsoft is a good example. It's a matter of, can I get to it when I need to? If I go on vacation, can I get email? Can I access files? If I have an emergency and I'm in the Caribbean, which would be awesome, and someone calls me and says, hey, it's an emergency at work, we need a document you've been working on, can I get to that document? Can I get that document to them? Another availability concern. And it's funny, again, we talk about how security is kind of contradictory. On this slide, confidentiality and availability don't play well together. We want to lock all this data down. We want to keep it secret away from people. But we also want to make it available and make sure people can get to it in as many ways as possible in some cases.
But the appropriate level at the appropriate time.
Yep.
Let's talk about least privilege, attack surface, and social engineering. Least privilege deals with, as a user, when I access a system, I should only have least privilege as what's needed. If I constantly log into a system as the admin and I don't need to, whatever happens to me as that user on the system as admin affects the whole system. If I make a mistake, I wipe out data, it has greater impact. If instead I log in as a user with less privilege and I get a virus, I wipe out data, I'm less likely to have a system-wide impact and more just it affects me as opposed to it affects the system.
Or, and this is a classic one for me, I love talking about this, if you leave your computer unlocked and go get a drink. So I've worked in IT departments for a long time and the help desks I've worked on where we, I won't say punished people, but we educated people in that you don't want to walk away from your desk and leave your computer unlocked.
Well, what happens if you walk away and your computer's unlocked? What does that give others access to?
Whatever you have access to. So if you're an administrator, or if you have access to things you shouldn't or don't need access to, I sit at your desk, I now have access to all of that.
And honestly, to modify data, to corrupt data, to do something malicious, that can only take 10 to 30 seconds. I mean, you don't need a long time to get something like that done.
I have a sort of an example, although it's not a least privilege issue because it was email-based, an email you have to have access to. But I did have a manager have to buy an entire team lunch because he walked away from his computer with the keyword unlocked. Send an email out to the whole team. You guys are great. You're amazing. You're so good. I want to buy lunch for the whole team. In appreciation. He was not at his desk at the time.
Huh. So
but
he
did it.
He wasn't necessarily the person who's... Oh, which this brings up a great example of when something is done with your user account, it's assumed that you did it, whether you're at your desk or not. So least privilege, and Christopher brings up a great idea of when you leave your computer, you should probably lock it.
Which kind of plays to the integrity.
Integrity, exactly. Attack surface. What attack surface refers to is computers, servers, workstations have areas that they can get to. Part of computer networking is allowing or enabling computers on the network to talk to each other. This is awesome, except when computers try to maliciously interfere. And it's not necessarily computers, but users on computers. Attack surface. What could this refer to? So you have a server that hosts a web server. If it's hosting a web server, there's certain points that ports that you need open, 80, 389, 80 for HTTP, 389 for HTTPS.
Which we talk about in the networking fundamentals course.
Oh, we do.
Yes.
We do.
It's NBA plug
notice,
completed.
Notice how I'm bringing it together here.
Yep.
Bringing it together. So there are certain points, ports, I keep saying points, there are certain ports that you don't need open. And if they're open, that enables users to access those ports. The mail port, the RDP port. If you don't need those ports open, you should probably close them. So ensuring that the surface that your computer projects to the internet is as shut down, and not even the internet, the network, is as shut down as possible and has as few entry areas as possible.
Yep.
Social engineering.
This one's my favorite.
People
if I'd ever gotten into security, it would have been this.
People don't even think of social engineering. Calling the help desk.
That's why it works.
Yeah. Calling the help desk. Hi, I'm sitting at computer 5, and I can't get on the network anymore. My name is, Jane Doe, and I'm locked out. Jane, you have a male voice. I have a little bit of a cold today. Which is why I was away from my desk. But now that I'm back, I've lost my password. Can you reset my password for me? Oh, sure, Jane, we're happy to do that. Because help desk people, for the most part, want to help you. Sometimes you don't get the help you want. It's not like they're sitting there thinking, I don't want to help this person. They do.
Have you? So you haven't worked on a help desk is what you're saying?
Oh, no, I've worked on...
Well, I imagine, but I've had those days when I'm like,
no, okay, that's
are there ways I can not help people and not get fired at the same time? But yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
But yeah, so they want to be helpful. Yep. So social engineering is basically, okay, so One thing that was pointed out to me, and I'm going to point this out just to keep myself from doing it. I said basically a ton last course. A ton. So I'm weaning myself off
word. I need some method.
I need like a quarter jar or something. There you go.
Yep.
Okay. Back to social engineering. So just interacting with somebody in a friendly manner. And the problem here is when somebody authoritatively comes to someone to request help, normally people will help them. And that's where social engineers get their foot in the door, is they come and authoritatively say, hey, I belong on the network. Will you help me? The help desk says, oh, sure, I can help you with that. And then they gain entrance into the network.
Any other, I'm just saying, do we have examples of any other good? I got to be careful because this is one of those topics we could talk about all day. Social engineering is one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Passwords on keyboards. You put your password. I actually kind of wish there was one here so I could pick it up and be like, oh, there's one right here. I had a customer years and years ago that it wasn't even a matter of social engineering. He would just write his latest password on the bezel of his monitor. So I didn't have to try and get it somehow. I could just walk in and see it. But yeah, social engineering is, and you'll see this disclaimer a lot nowadays on websites and with a lot of different service companies, asking for your password. Like the email, there we go, phishing's the best one. An email from PayPal, and everybody may have seen this. Your account's been compromised, we need you to log in right now. Username and password. Click this link, go to this website. And I'll give them credit. The last couple of years, I've seen some great ones.
Oh, they look really good. Really good.
Even I am like, I need to check the URL because the rest of this looks completely legitimate. And they're trying to get your password by looking like they are the authority and they need your information because they've been compromised. And it's the examples of social engineering are terrific. I'm trying to think of some of my favorite ones. The classic one, watching someone type their password.
Yes. Just walking over the shoulder.
Hey, can you look at that document for me? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tick, 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 tick. Yeah.
So I actually keep a password that is, I'll tell some people, kind of my standard password. 9 characters, 5 letters, 1 special, 2 caps, 3 numbers. And they're all randomly arranged.
Wait. You're talking about password stuff? We have a password area. We have a password section in the... I think you're foreshadowing.
Sort of. But in the conversation of social engineering. So I'll tell people they can actually watch me type my password because it's confusing enough and I type it fast enough that they're not actually going to be able to sit there and figure it out unless I do it 3 or 4 times in a row. Another little trick. Most people don't want to do that, though. Who here, I wish I'd get a show of hands, who here wants a password that is a random arrangement of letters, numbers, and special characters?
Yeah, for the most part, I don't.
Yeah, no, most people don't want that.
No, instead, I'll kind of give how I use my passwords. For my passwords, I use 2 words. 1 word, static.
Okay.
I actually found this out, or I started using this when I was on a networking team. So we were on a networking team. We had 1 password that was, or 1 word that was static. And then the second word is what would change. So you could actually talk within the area of what that second word was. So let's say your static word is like plant, underscore plant. So now when the password is changed, I just come up to you and go, hey, Christopher, it's blue today.
Okay.
So now you know blue underscore plant. We can all within our area talk about the password openly, but people still don't have the overall password scheme.
That makes sense.
That actually makes it a bit easier. Here at Microsoft, we have to change our passwords every 90 days, 120?
I think it's 90 days.
We have to change our password every so often. It gets confusing. After you've been here 8, 9 years, you're like, oh, wow, what have I used? What haven't I used? We'll talk about password policies later.
Yep.
So you can't repeat passwords. It becomes confusing about what you have and haven't used. With these 2-stage passwords, I can leave my 1 password just taped to my monitor, and people aren't going to get it. People aren't going to get that second portion.
But still don't do that.
Yeah, it's not best. I actually have a lock on my door, so which we're going to talk about here.
Yeah.
Here when we talk about physical security.
Beautiful segues.
Look at that. See, like professionals. See how we professionally do this.
This is what we do.
Risk management. So what we're talking about here in risk management is responses. First of all, avoid. except...
Avoid what? What are we avoiding?
Risk.
Okay.
Avoiding risk, accept the risk, mitigate and transfer. One thing that people don't think about is you do not need high-level security to protect pictures of your dog. Not that pictures of your dog or cat aren't important, but do you really need five-star security for it? No. You need an appropriate level of security for what you're protecting. Let's say let's talk about protecting social security numbers of the employees at your company. That needs five-star security. That needs like the utmost. And I'm saying 5 stars out of 5, 5 being the highest, just so we're not confused. It's not a scale of 1 to 100. So 5 stars, highest level of security. So use an appropriate level of security for the data that you're working with. So avoidance. So avoid data risk. Don't leave your password out. If you have your systems in a locked room, don't leave the door open. Accept that there's going to be risk. If somebody really wants at your data, it's possible that they can find a way to get it. Again, implementing an appropriate measure for the data on hand.
Well, and a good example of that would be the avoidance one. I could kind of segue these together. The avoidance one you talked about, attack surface. If I have a server that's serving web pages, I don't need to open ports 25. I don't need SMTP open. I don't need RDP open 3389. Close those down. That's risk avoidance. I don't need these services. Turn them off. No one's coming in on port 25 if port 25 is closed. Acceptance is I'm putting a web server on the internet. 80 has to be open. That web server has to be online. I can't not have the risk of that server being attacked in some way. So it's a matter of knowing what it is you're doing and what the risks are that go along with that. Putting up a web server has risks. Really, just putting a web server on the internet as is has risks, regardless of any measures you've taken to secure that server or the resources on it individually. You just have to be okay with that or not put up a web server.
Well, it comes down to walking down the street on any given day, you could get hit by a bus. You don't wish to get hit by a bus. I don't wish for anyone to get hit by a bus, but we take reasonable precaution. We walk on the sidewalk. We don't jaywalk. You walk at a light. You walk when it says walk. So you take a reasonable level of precaution for what you're doing.
Mitigation. What does that mean?
To mitigate is to take an appropriate level of action for something that's kind of going sideways. So you see, you used a web server. So we have a web server up. You see that the web server is starting to get maybe a denial of service attack or something of that nature. So you see the system that you've implemented being attacked somehow. You have software that tells you, you've been alerted. The oh no's have gone up. Oh no, attack, ah! So now we need to take an appropriate response and mitigate that attack, whatever that may be.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Transfer.
This is my favorite one. Oh, this is a huge security. That's someone else's fault. Let's make them take care of it. But to some degree, and I make a joke out of that because you can, but it's true. I'm going to put my servers in a data center. Let's say I'm going to put my servers in a hosted data center. Or, good example, Azure. I love that we can tie these things together.
Isn't that awesome?
I spun up an Azure service this weekend. There are risks spinning up a web service on the internet. Secure servers. Can people actually get to the physical hardware? I have no idea. I'm transferring the risk of maintaining the physical servers to Microsoft. I don't want to maintain the boxes for 100 different reasons. Updates, cost, security, high availability. I don't want to do any of that. So I'm taking all the risk of all of those things and I'm transferring it to a hoster, in this case, Microsoft.
Well, do you want to be in the data center business?
No. I already am. It's terrible.
So let somebody else do that. So transfer responsibility to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then focus on what it is you want to do.
Yep, and all the risks go with it.
Exactly, and that's one of the benefits of Azure, is that we can transfer small, medium, and even large businesses can transfer responsibility, data center responsibility to another company,
yep.
In this case, Microsoft, to handle that, and then developers can focus on developing and not the underlying technology.
And then Microsoft, to go back to that list of four, Microsoft gets to avoid and mitigate the risks.
Exactly. Next, physical security. Physical security is your first line of defense. You can achieve this by using access control at different layers. Layer sounds really technical. It's not really technical. It's more conceptual. I'll show you here in just a second. And then defense in depth approach. So having a multi-tiered or multi-layered level of approach.
And now, I will make a note here. Defense in depth applies to physical security and logical or technological security. So here we're just putting it in the context of physical. We'll talk more about it as we go through other sections.
Defense in depth. So external perimeter. So can somebody even get on the property that your servers are hosted in and get in the building?
Step one.
Security cards.
Yep, we already have. You may have these. You may already
use them. So, yes, you have your security card. You swipe the security card. It allows you to get in the building. So now we have one level of security. So we have an external perimeter security. This external perimeter security can be breached. Tailgating. So
I've never, ever done that.
You've never forgotten your badge and tailgated in with somebody?
I would never tailgate against the rules because I needed to get to my office because I was late to a meeting.
Because that would be wrong.
It would be.
It would be wrong.
It's against the rules.
Internal perimeter. So once you've gotten into the building, you may have another swipe to get into the room, the physical data room.
You had an example of this. You have a lock on your office.
I have a lock in my office. Exactly. Exactly. So I swipe to get into my building. Then I have additionally a lock on my office that I need to key into. So now once you're in the secure area, how is that secured area? What's in there? Are there cameras? Are there spy infrared lights keeping? Okay, I don't even know why I just thought of this, but the movie with Catherine Zeta-Jones where she's flipping through the infrared lights.
I know what movie you're talking about.
And Sean Connery.
Yep.
People in the back, help us.
Anybody remember the name?
Entrapment. Yep. Thank you.
There you go.
The movie's totally fair, but watching Catherine Zeta-Jones crawl through lights, it's not bad.
Little laser beams.
Little laser beams. Shows flexibility.
That's true. I don't know if that's a security risk.
Cunning. Though. I'm just noting. I'm not good or bad. I'm just saying that there are people who are able to do some pretty crazy things.
That's true.
So secure area. And then your servers and racks. So having your servers and racks, maybe the racks have doors and are locked so you physically can't get to the server. So you just see that there's these tiers of security that you're working with.
Guys with guns, it's possible. I've had customers or clients, especially when I was a trainer, students that worked in secure locations where there's a guy with a gun that makes sure you can't go somewhere you're not supposed to go. It's a pretty decent deterrent, I would imagine. I've never worked in a place where someone with a gun kept me in or out of somewhere, so... Luckily.
Well, again, what is the level of security that you need? Do you have pictures of your pets? Or do you have social security numbers and banking numbers for major companies?
Yep. So we've got external, in this case, in the examples given, external network or external security, cards, locked doors, internal security, additional locks, additional card readers, maybe a person. Here at Microsoft, we have a receptionist who is, to some degree, a security barrier. Even if I do get through the open door, and here the doors work differently depending on what building you're in, but even if I'm going to that next door, and I may even have a badge, and that badge may not work. I scan it twice, nothing happens. I scan it again, nothing happens. The person at that front desk is going to say, can I help you? Where are you trying to get? Check to make sure your badge does work if for some reason it's not working.
Or you're valid. Check the validity of your authorization.
Yep. Maybe you worked here until last week and you're trying to get in the building and we're pretty quick, I think, about turning off those access.
For nefarious purposes.
Exactly.
Nefarious or malicious.
Yep. Maybe we're pretty good about turning those accesses off, from what I understand. Haven't had to experience it yet, luckily.
External perimeter. We've talked about quite a few of these, secured by using. We've talked about cameras, parking lot lights. And again, we're thinking like the parking lot area external to the building. Maybe there's even a gate.
Yep.
Military style that you have to... get in, get through the raised gate, get in. Oh, it even says gate with guard, gate with access badge reader, guard patrols.
Yep.
Internal, so once inside the building, locks on exterior or interior doors, cameras, badge readers, guard desks and patrols, smoke detectors. So that's another area of security is environmental security. Mm-hmm. Smoke, fire, water, all of those can cause damages that you may not think that, oh, well, somebody didn't gain access to my system. But remember, part the CIA, confidentiality, availability, and integrity. Water, smoke, electrical interruption, electrical spike, all of those deal with availability and integrity. So interruption, a tidal wave, a flood, a fire, natural disaster of some kind, zombie apocalypse, whatever that may be, Katrina, all of these can create situations to create harm.
Yep.
And negatively impact availability and data integrity.
Yeah, last one. We missed the last one. I love this one. I just talked about this last week. I was at a conference and we talked about man traps. And there were some people there who don't know what a man trap is. Have you ever been in a man trap? Anybody here? Anybody in the back? A man trap is, you'll see these in data centers pretty frequently. You walk into, and in some cases they're physically trapping in the way they're built, but not always. Sometimes it's just a series of doors. You walk through one door, that door closes and locks.
Oh, the single gate doors with the guard in between.
Yes. Some of them are a step
further.
Those
are called man traps?
Well, those rooms can be considered a man trap because once you're in it, you can't go anywhere without authorization. But they have better ones that are essentially a big cylinder with one door built in that you walk into the door and the room rotates and you're locked in. Like, there's not another door to go in or out of. There's just one. So they turn it and you're trapped in that room. That's the ones with the two doors, I can get out. Usually they're panic bar door. I can leave if I want to. These rooms, you walk in, they close it, and you're not going anywhere until someone says you can go somewhere.
Mm.
And I've been in one of those once. A little intimidating.
See, now I've been in the single door room where they basically, door here opens, you walk in, it shuts.
And locks.
And then you have to talk to the security guard that's stationed right here. And then once you've done appropriate ID, appropriate authorization, this door opens and then you can.
Yep. That's a man trap. They're awesome.
Okay.
Turnstiles, a little less exciting. They're just a matter of, anybody who's been on a subway, you've got the little turnstile you come up to that you have to pay before you can go through. We have those here. Some of our buildings have them.
Secured areas, so specific portions of the building may have a secure area.
Server rooms.
Badge readers, keypads, another instance. Biometric technologies, fingerprint scannings, retinal scanners, voice recognition systems. Security doors, so it could be a security door. X-ray scanner, metal detector, again, to ensure what you are and aren't taking out of that room. There could be cameras, and then intrusion detection systems, light beam, infrared, microwave, and or ultrasonic.
Lasers. Catherine Zeta-Jones climbing through lasers.
Flipping through. Yep.
There was another one. One of the Ocean's movies, they had a scene like that.
Oh, did they?
Yep. I think it was the same
Ocean's
one.
Movies are good. Like them. Device security, so servers. Ensuring that they're physically locked. So if somebody can come in and physically remove a device and take it, then at that point, they can take however long to get in that they want to. You may say, oh, well, my security to get into the system is pretty reasonable, but once they get in, they can't really do anything. Well, you hear about people that yank ATMs from stores. So at that point, they physically remove the device, they take it to another location, and then can take however long they want to get in to what they want to do.
Absolutely.
Desktop secured to desks, and then mobile devices, docking stations, security cables, safes.
I know one thing that you don't see this very often, the desktop secured to desks and the mobile devices and docking stations with the cables, you don't often see physically secured hardware at the client level, desktops and laptops. So a lot of the security you're going to mitigate another way. We have this laptop. We could buy some hardware and lock it to the desk, which kind of defeats the purpose of it being a laptop. But
mobility.
And makes them,
you hamper mobility.
You do. So instead, you build systems that prevent sensitive data from being on that laptop in the first place.
Okay.
Make the device
mitigation
less of a security risk and make your access focus more on the access, focus less on the device.
Well, there's multiple ways that could be done. You could use some type of hard drive securing encryption technology. So as you boot up, you have to type in a key or a password of something.
Do we have one of those?
BitLocker, something indeed. Of that nature, yeah, right?
We do.
Right? So we have BitLocker. As you boot up, you have to type in a key, or if you have TPM, it'll hold it.
Yep.
So if the drive is removed from that device, it's not going to be usable. We have that. Scanning technologies. Another method that you mentioned is keeping the data off the local system.
Yep.
You hear periodically, again, part of having a laptop or having a mobile device is mobility. So ensuring that the device is not only encrypted, or if it's not encrypted, that there's no data on the device itself, and you're remotely accessing resources and data. So if the device is taken, there's no compromising information on it.
And that's something that, as people watching this video maybe coming into IT, like I said, new to IT, new to security, one of the biggest pushes in IT right now is bring your own device. We call it
people-centric IT.
People-centric IT.
And so under that, there's BYOD, bring your own device.
Which means I have a phone in my pocket that is mine that I can bring to work or take out of work and maybe do work on. I get my work email on my personal phone. Microsoft has to find a way to mitigate the risks associated with that. There are ways that they can, from their servers, our servers, control certain aspects of my phone. And in some cases, you may have heard of different companies, different technologies. If I connect my phone to a corporate network to get email, if my phone gets lost, they can erase the whole phone.
Remote wipe.
Yep, they can wipe it. Gone. Done. So it's a bigger concern nowadays to make sure the device is not the risk, but the device's access to your network is more what you're focused on. So, yeah, it just depends.
Theft recovery software. So being able to locate your device if it gets stolen, and laptop alarm. So I see this laptop alarm, and I totally flash to Despicable Me 2 with the little minion booking around with the helmet with the flash and all.
I want an alarm like that for anything.
I do too. Yeah. The minute something goes wrong, I want a little minion booking by wearing the helmet, flashing with the wee-woo-wee-woo.
That would make IT work exponentially more exciting.
We have some good ideas here.
Yeah, we do.
They just need to get implemented.
I wonder. Yeah, we'll have to make some calls. We have a research department. We'll have to find some email addresses.
We're at the end.
Awesome.
So additional resources and next steps. As we mentioned before, this course isn't to cover everything. It's to get your feet wet, give you some ideas. One thing we want to ensure is that you, from this course, have the ability to go out and become a bit more self-sufficient. One of those resources is Microsoft.com/learning. So look around on that website and you'll think you'll find a lot of great resources.
Yeah, in fact, on this slide, we've got instructor-led courses and exams and certifications in those second two columns. To find all of that information, you can go to Microsoft.com/learning and find it. Courses, we have a class locator that'll help you find a place near you. You can take the course if you want to get in and get your feet wet, get your hands dirty, actually, in this case, because they're going to be hands-on courses. And places to take, schedule, sign up for the actual exams once you've completed either this course or an instructor-led course. The books you usually find online. We do ebooks a lot. Different vendors sell different books. Microsoft Press is obviously our preferred publisher for books. And I'm trying to think of anything else in this case. Again, to revisit what I talked about in the prerequisites, a lot of the things here you saw in the prerequisites, it really just depends on the order in which you're doing these courses. So some of these you may have already done at this point if you're watching this one. Some of them you may not. And I included at the bottom of the instructor-led and exams, 20410, installing and configuring Windows Server 2010, and exam 7410. That's the first of our MCSA series, Microsoft Certified Systems, I think it's administrator these days.
Administrator, I think.
They change them from time to time. This is where once you finish the MTAs and you're getting into really wanting to then dive into the Microsoft world, learn about our technologies very specifically, our implementations of security, of networking, the MCSA track's where you're going to start usually. So that's the first exam and course in that track.
And then the exams and certifications?
Yep, that's all. It's all same place. And take the course, take the test. We've had a couple of people email us and tell us that this course prepared them for the MTA cert, so.
Yeah, which is great.
That's terrific.
Oh, and by the way, Price for MVA content? How much does it cost to join the site or to take the courses?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Knowledge for free.
Exactly.
Come take some classes. The MVA courses are really, really good, taught by a variety, typically subject matter experts
taught by some of the best you can find.
You can't beat that. I mean, you're not going to find, that's one of the benefits. You're not going to find that in a classroom. Not that the instructors aren't good and very knowledgeable, but now you're talking about you're being taught a course by the people who are developing the technology, creating the technology. Can't beat that.
You can't. Most of the time. I don't know. We'll see. They may be good at creating and developing and designing technology, but...
and not so good at talking to the people.
Their ability to teach you about it...
may not be so good.
...remains to be seen. No, we've got great presenters in MBA, so all of our, I said every single course is amazing.
So come on back, take some classes.
Yeah, and we'll be back for Module 2 at some point.
Exactly. Great. Thanks for coming.